So I am here in the Freedom Archive studio in Mission District in San Francisco, and we were going to talk with Claude Marx about the San Francisco 8. Claude?
Well, thank you for having us on, giving us a chance to talk.
So tell us about the San Francisco 8. Who are they and what's going on?
Well, in January 23rd, eight people were charged in conjunction with a 1971 murder of a police officer at Ingleside Station in San Francisco. The case has essentially gone unsolved for many, many years. There were a number of investigations in the 70s in which people were arrested in conjunction with the same case, but the evidence presented by the government at that time essentially was evidence that was arrived at through torturing people who had been arrested in New Orleans in 1973 and forced to sign statements that essentially were constructed by the police themselves. People who were members of the Black Panther Party in New Orleans. There were 13 people at that time who were arrested, and we know of three who were in fact tortured. One of the people who was tortured is thought to be the main witness for the government in the reopening of this case, even though the testimony given at that time to the police has been recanted innumerable times, and the case itself and the evidence, particularly the torture statements, have been thrown out by at least three courts.
Can you elaborate on the methods of torture that were used?
Yes, I mean, they were fairly extensive. They involved people being stripped naked for several days on end, being nearly suffocated to death with plastic bags placed over their heads, the use of electric probes and cattle prods, beatings, basically an unimaginable amount of physical brutality. And at the time, the torturers were members of the New Orleans police who would work people over, and then members of the police departments of New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, as well as the FBI, were brought in.
So how does this testimony, which was extracted, what, 35 years ago?
Yes.
How does that affect people today here in San Francisco, these eight people?
Well, we think that the government's main testimony is essentially this testimony arrived at by torturing people. How does it affect them? Well, it's certainly a basis for the California State Attorney General to charge people and arrest them. The larger conspiracy that's being charged starts in 1968 and goes all the way through 1973. We think that this is really a reincarnation of COINTELPRO. COINTELPRO being the official FBI program targeting a lot of progressive movements, but in particular targeting the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Movement from the 60s and 70s. Allegedly, that program was dismantled. Its purpose was to destroy black organizations. It involved the use of a whole menu of illegal activities, from outright assassination of leaders to false imprisonment, the construction of cases against people, which in the case of Geronimo Pratt led to his being imprisoned for 27 years behind false evidence created by the police. I'm just giving these as examples. The assassination of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark in 1969 in Chicago, both Panthers. an attempt to create as much internal dissension as possible by pitting people against one another. We're still feeling the effects of a lot of this, because not only are the individuals affected, but the intent of the government to dismantle black organizations that represented a challenge to the racism and the predominant oppression of black people by the United States and both the federal government and state and local police forces. Today, this program is well documented, but the effects, of course, are very difficult to measure, and we think this case is really an extension of that by trying to resurrect a 35-year-old case with tainted testimony. None of the agencies or agents that have ever been implicated in COINTELPRO and in this whole historical framework have ever been brought to justice or been held accountable for the massive level of violence and oppression that COINTELPRO represented. And the U.S. government, in a period that we're in under the Patriot Act, feels emboldened enough to resurrect some of the same material and testimony from back in the 70s and to reemploy it today. I think there's a couple of purposes to it. One is to basically intimidate people, particularly in black communities, but in general, that resisting and opposing the predominant ideas and policies of the U.S. government comes at great cost. That's one. And more particular to that, I think the U.S. government is trying to legitimize torture in the name of fighting terrorism, just as it does in the cases in Guantanamo, just as it protects the people making the high-level decisions in places like Abu Ghraib, just as prisoners have been treated for years and years and years, basically with a level of violence, prisons themselves being institutions that are growing totally out of control as a way to essentially control black and brown populations in this country. I feel that all these things are related to one another and stem back from the very inception of what this country is about, which is stealing land, colonizing people, slavery. And today we're seeing the modern incarnation of that, that the government is highly resourced in order to pursue cases against aging black activists, and yet has not ever taken seriously any of the culpability of the agents and agencies that are responsible for all of the violence and racist oppression over the years.
So the government has also used the grand jury process in 2005 in this case?
Well, there's been many grand juries around this case, starting in 2003. We think that there's actually been five different grand juries at various points between 2003 and 2005. None of them have ever indicted anybody. So it's sort of curious that now, circumventing the grand jury process and essentially filing a complaint against these eight people, actually nine, one of them is unavailable, is really an escalation of and essentially a use of the so-called judicial process that goes beyond both the grand juries, which have not indicted anyone, as I said, and essentially now takes these complaints and files charges against people.
So these eight defendants had their first court appearance the other day. Can you talk about that?
Well, to be more accurate, two of them had a court appearance earlier this month. four of them were present in court this week on the 14th, Wednesday the 14th. There are two people who have been imprisoned for over 30 years that are still in New York State. One person who was arrested in New York City and is currently waiting extradition on Rikers Island. And one person in Florida, in Panama City, also waiting extradition under the charges.
So what's going to happen next?
Well, there's a hearing scheduled for March 13th, which is a Tuesday, in Department 12 at 9 a.m. We hope people come out and show support for these brothers. They have yet to enter pleas. There has yet to be a full bail hearing. We don't know whether by the 13th, whether or not there'll be other defendants present in court. It's entirely possible. But we know at least four of these brothers are going to be in court on the 13th.
So how can people continue supporting the San Francisco 8?
The first thing is to become informed. The easiest way to do that is to go to the website, which is cdhrsupport.org. You can sign up for email notification, news stories as they break. That's a good place to do it. And so that's my best recommendation. If people want to come to court, the next court hearing is on March 13th at 9 a.m. Department 12 in San Francisco at 850 Bryant Street. Get there on time if you want to get in, because there was an overflow crowd last time, which is a good thing, and we're hoping that that happens every time they're in court.
Thank you, Claude. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, but thanks very much for the chance to be on your program.
Awesome.